Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Please be aware, the first segment of today's show may cause distress to some people as it deals with sexual assault and violence against women. Thank you. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. About 1 in 3 women and 1 in 10 men will experience sexual violence in their lifetime. That is according to the Public Health Agency of Canada. Locally, there are no specific statistics given to residents of Northumberland. Often, sexual assaults are combined with other violent crimes, making the picture less clear. May is Sexual Assault Prevention Month. Today's first interview is with Nancy Johnson, the Executive Director of the Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. She will talk about some of those numbers, but it is not all bad news. The rest of the conversation will be about women transitioning back into the community. She will explain how these women and children integrate back into the community. Next is another story about women. I am delighted to have with me today Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. Welcome back to Consider This.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me.
There are so many statistics that get used when trying to describe the number of sexual assaults taking place in Ontario and in our community. What figures can you share with us today that gives listeners a picture of what is happening?
I think when I was reviewing statistics, we don't keep specific statistics around sexual assaults. Because again, we sort of put that together with gender-based violence, right? We know that women in intimate partners, oftentimes sexual abuse is a piece of the puzzle. One of the statistics that when I was looking at some articles earlier this week is that we do know that only 6% of sexual assaults are ever reported in Canada. So I think sexual violence is still one of those great taboos in our country, in our community. And I think there are some, you know, judicial issues with the issue as well. And we know that, you know, there have been judge shortages. There's lots of delays in these cases that make it that they don't even move forward and they're thrown out. They're troubling statistics. And certainly when I talk to colleagues who work more in in sexual assault centers, they, like us, continue to see more and more instances of sexual violence in our community. So, you know, unfortunately it's just trending upwards in their communities as well as ours.
Well, it's interesting because when you talk about this, I was also trying to find specific statistics. And even in our own police department, when they report on sexual assaults, it's all lumped into what they call violent crime. Mm-hmm. So we don't pull those numbers out. And I wonder, how does that impact our ability, one, to talk about it coherently, but also to take preventative measures or to act responsibly within our community to help change that situation?
Yeah, what I can speak to here, which I think is a unique opportunity, is, as you know, Rob, we've probably talked about it before on your show, that one of our staff is seconded by Coburg Police Services. And we go in and review all of the reports around gender-based violence. So when we go in each week, any of those would be flagged for us and we would review them. So we're reviewing it in terms of being able to follow up with the victim in a really timely way, as well as working cooperatively with Coburg Police Services and looking at, are we using a victim-centered approach? Are we asking the right questions in an appropriate manner? And we've really been able to develop that relationship over probably the last 10 years, that we can sometimes have those conversations around, you know, how do we do this? How do we do this better without it feeling like we're pointing fingers? Because that's not what this is about. It's about serving individuals in our community who have experienced violence.
And I think that that's an incredible approach that we have, and it's very sensitive to the victims and to helping them, which is obviously the goal. But for the broader community, without statistics, without us having able to say there were this many sexual assaults and what's happening, it becomes more difficult for us to then paint a picture for the larger public to then be able to respond and say, you know, we want to support this, or we want to support that, or here's a policy direction that we as a community democratically support, rather than just it's something, as you were saying earlier, that it gets off into a shadow, into a dark corner, and we're really not talking about it.
It's a very good point, and I think that that has been one of the challenges. And we also know that even if we had the statistics, Rob, they're going to be incredibly underreported. You know, it really is just the tip of the iceberg. Even if we peel it back and get some hard data, it's not going to at all shed a light as to what is actually happening. Because it's certainly often, it's so underreported through police. It's also underreported anywhere. You know, women and young women are silent about this, and they don't want to come forward. And are often very, very reluctant to do that for good reason, unfortunately.
Well, when people do come to you and are seeking your services, how many people right now are just generally seeking those services? And what percentage or what sense of are those people then revealing that they have been experienced sexual assault?
Yeah, it's often reported in the context of their relationships, Rob, after we build relationship with the client and have that trusting relationship, because we know how difficult it is to talk about this issue. And for women who experience sexual violence in their relationships, it's really complicated for them. And it's not something that just is easily revealed, and nor do we think that that's necessarily the importance of our work. The importance of our work is building those relationships with our clients, with women and kids, that do feel eventually that they do want to talk about it again in an appropriate way that is helpful to them. Because oftentimes when they're revealing, and we even bring up the idea of reporting to police or going to the hospital and doing a forensic exam, they don't want to do it. And I understand it. I hate to say it, but I understand it. And, you know, do we encourage women to report to police? I mean, again, it's a really delicate issue, right? Is that the best thing for her? And is she re-traumatized through the court system? Unfortunately, that's usually what happens.
Well, it seems to me too. I mean, and I'm basing this on also on previous conversations you and I have had, but it's also so many hurdles, just not just the courts, but you know, you were mentioning, you know, going to the hospital and having an exam. Has it ever changed that I know in the past we don't get it done here in Northumberland, not at Northumberland Hills Hospital. You have to go off to Peterborough, Oshawa, Kingston, Toronto. Is that still the case?
It is still the case.
So, I mean, it just seems like there's just a series of hurdles. And I mean, we've also seen, which I want to ask you about, and that is some of these more high profile instances where, I mean, we're just watching right now south of the border a trial where at the heart of it is a sexual relationship between, you know, and was it consensual or did it even happen? And then we see, you know, Harvey Weinstein case where, you know, a movie mogul and was charged, and now it's been turned over. What do these high-profile cases do that it impacts the people that you're dealing with and their ability to talk about sexual assault or even to move forward?
Yeah, I don't think it's done. I don't think it's moving that needle forward, that's for sure. Because if women are watching that, right, they're thinking, oh boy, why would I? You know, we look at what happened with Gian Gomeschi, you know, a number of years ago, and that was a, you know, high profile, and particularly here in Canada. And you know, women are not looking at this going, oh, I want to sign up for that and be led through that level of scrutiny, to prove that it wasn't consensual. And yeah, I don't think these high profile cases are doing any favors, to highlighting the issue in any really meaningful way, right? I think there's very little narrative in terms of what that means for the victim in these circumstances, right? They're pretty silent. So yeah, it's a complicated issue, Rob. I do have to say though, because I need to always find, you know, some light in this tunnel of work sometimes. And I can speak very highly of the work that the Women's Health Centre does through Peterborough Regional Health Centre, around sexual violence and domestic assault. It really is a model of incredibly great care. And we've had many women who have used their services and speak very, very highly. It's exactly how hospitals should be set up to treat victims. You know, as soon as you know, if you go in through their emergency, they've got somebody on call 24 hours a day who can come in, who's a trained nurse. They have social workers who wrap around services very, very quickly. Women are, you know, immediately seen for counseling. There's no wait list to deal with the immediate trauma. You know, they take care of the physical needs. They will do the forensic tests if that's what somebody decides. And again, I think they do that in a very victim-centered way. There's no pressure to do it. It's offered as an option. And I really can speak very highly of the services up there. And I think we're lucky that we're that close to Peterborough. And I think they do a great job.
Is this something we need here in Northumberland?
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, we've raised it a few times. I think we'll continue to raise it. You know, PRHC, they've got bigger pockets to do it. You know, because it would require some additional funds to go in that way. They'd have to have some trained nurses. Our hospital is much smaller than PRHC for sure. I'm just fortunate, you know, we're lucky that we have it that close and such an exceptional model of care, I think. And they do a great job. So we will always assist women in getting up there because we know transportation can be an issue, Rob. And sometimes, you know, sometimes women don't want to go to our local hospital, right? It's a small community. So it could be your, you know, it could be your neighbor who's the triage nurse who you're needing to disclose this to. So as much as, you know, sometimes local things are great, I can also see that for some victims, they don't want to do local. So I think it has both sides of it for sure.
One of the things that we haven't explored in the past that I'd like to explore today is how people transition from your services back into the community. And I was curious about how someone transitions out of an emergency shelter like yours back into the community. How does Cornerstone help with this process?
Yeah, so we have it's something that staff work on with women on throughout their stay. They know that they can only stay temporarily in our shelter. So we have staff who assist them. We have been fortunate that we've developed some positive relationships with some local landlords, who will, you know, who do reach out to us and we reach out to them when we have people in need because they know that we'll provide ongoing support. So we don't just say to women, off you go, and our service ends. We do have women who continue to stay involved with us for a long period of time. And sometimes it's for some of the practical things, right? They need to figure out their financial things. They might still be going through the family court system. They also might want, a more intense level of counseling. So we offer all of those supports, Rob. So they stay connected. A lot of women stay connected to us for a long period of time. We've also developed in the we're in year two. We do have a partnership with Habitat for Humanity. So they purchased two houses for their own development purposes, but weren't ready to get started on those projects yet because they're doing their big build in Baltimore. So we have a really great relationship with them. They said, "Hey, we've got this opportunity. Do you want to lease these two houses and offer them to your clients as sort of a second stage transitional housing program?" So we jumped at the chance. It's been really, really successful. They're located in Coburg. Obviously, we don't disclose where it is, but they're two really nice homes. So we have one home that we use for families, and then one home that we use for single women. And again, we have staff who go there on a regular basis, provide support, ensure that we're sort of matching women who are in similar circumstances so that they can live together in peace and tranquility. So they've done a really good job at that, and it's been really successful. So it's helped Rob with the, the constant no beds in our shelter, and that is unfortunately the continued trend. But looking for every opportunity we can, and we continue to look at transitional housing options, because we don't want women and children staying long time in the shelter. They're not supposed to. It was never meant for them to be here for months and months. So it's nice that they can have a piece of more independent living and still have the wraparound supports that our staff can offer. So it's been really successful, and we'll continue to look for opportunities like that.
How booked are you now? I know in the past when we've talked, you've always had more than 100% capacity. Where are you at now?
Yeah, pretty similar. We don't have any open beds. We don't have any open beds right now.
Okay.
Again, that sometimes changes. Again, through COVID, it was a weird time, as you know, Rob. But we're pretty much back to, back to capacity. The need is great, and we know that housing is a real critical issue in our community. So one that, the board continues to look for opportunities to potentially build something. It's just a matter of finding the right opportunity, and one that we're going to be able to financially manage over the years, because it's not as easy as, we'll just, add more beds to your shelter. Well, I say to people, I would love to, but you need operating dollars. It's just like a hospital. You can't just, add seven more people without ongoing operating to ensure that we can maintain good staff levels and maintain excellence of service. Because I'm not prepared to offer anything but the best service we can, and that requires the right amount of people to do the right work.
Do people stay a set amount of time, or is there a certain flexibility? Could you explain how that part of the
Sure,
process?
sure. It depends on the circumstances, Rob, but generally, again, we're not telling women, "Oh, your time's up, see you later." We staff work really hard with women to come up with options of where they're going to go. Typically, what we'll say is oftentimes an average stay might be 90 days, about 3 months. Again, though, it really depends on circumstances. It depends on levels of risk. It depends on, the size of families. We know that women with, a lot of kids, that can be pretty challenging. And it can also be challenging if she's going through separation and family court issues. So yeah, the staff do a really good job of sort of looking at individual circumstances and what do they need. And certainly risk factors is one that is always top of mind for us.
Once they leave the shelter, how do you deal with safety issues?
Yeah, I think that that's, again, sort of top of mind for us, right? Has there been any escalation of violence or threats since she left? Because we do know, of course, from Death Review Committee reports over the years that we do know that women are most at risk at the point of separation. So, again, we'll kind of weigh those things out in terms of, again, individual circumstances and what's going on.
Affordable housing is a major issue everywhere.
Yeah.
But when we talk about the kinds of things that you need, and you've alluded to it several times now in our conversation, and that is the availability of affordable space for women who are leaving and transitioning back into our community. How well do you think Northumberland County is set up to provide necessary supports?
Yes, for sure. So Cornerstone is a member of our provincial association. So it's called Ontario Association of Interval and Transition Houses. So we are members of that organization, and their number one goal and their activity is to do political action. So Marlene Hamm, who's the executive director at OAIF, she has the ear of government all the time. And they go to her on a regular basis. What's happening in your sector? What are you hearing from your members? So it works out quite well, Rob, because we know that organizations like Cornerstone and myself as an executive director were stretched. We wear a lot of hats in an organization that deals with complex issues. And for us to be able to do advocacy well, it requires a lot of time. So we're having conversations certainly at the local level, but it's also really important that we're getting to the ear of the government that can make changes and that can increase our funding. So Marlene at OAIF does an amazing job. She's great at what she does. It's very non, she has to be nonpartisan. She's worked with, all three governments over the years. And we're really clear about this. Gender-based violence is not a partisan issue. It's one that we all need to care about, and whoever is in government needs to listen to us. And I think Marlene does a good job at that. And I think individually, as executive directors across the province, I think a lot of us do that as well at the provincial level. We don't receive any municipal dollars at Cornerstone. So it is the province that we need to have most of those conversations with. And we do. I've had many conversations with David Piccini and other MPPs over the years. So yeah, David has been a good advocate for us. And this government has given us increase in funding. Certainly through COVID, we received funding from both the federal government and the provincial government. They knew that we became really important during the pandemic. If they didn't know about us before, they certainly knew about us then. And at our Women's Day luncheon yesterday, Maryam Monsef was our guest speaker, and she spoke really eloquently and told a great story about when COVID happened. The scramble that happened there in Ottawa, as it happened everywhere, that we're all going, what the heck does this mean? And Miriam talked about, her point to the Prime Minister and her other colleagues at the time was, well, we're telling people to go home and stay home. And she made the point very appropriately that home isn't always a safe place for people. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And do we need to be putting more money in organizations like Cornerstone? So yeah, I thought it was a good story that she told, and one that was important for people to hear because it wasn't a safe place for people.
I can truly appreciate, I'm sure listeners do as well, that you can't do everything. As far as talking to local politicians and to local government, I certainly appreciate the fact that the provincial government's going to be the place where you're going to move the big pieces. But It comes down to two. I mean, official plans and what type of housing are we building and what are developers coming and proposing? So there is a role for municipalities.
Yeah, I think we have for sure, Rob, over the years, we've attended the Affordable Housing Committee. We do talk to our municipalities. We have support from various, you know, some lower tier municipalities. And certainly if, you know, if we move forward with putting together some proposals for our own housing development, I think that those conversations will happen much more readily. So we do have, you know, we have Nicole Beattie on our board of directors. We have both chiefs of police on our board. We have good working relationships with a number of folks, good working relationships with the county. So yeah, I think overall we have some good relationships, and you know, in terms of future builds, I think they know that oftentimes our hand is up. You know, are there opportunities for partnerships? Again, though, we have to sort of weigh out what can we afford to manage on an ongoing basis. Because when I'm long gone and happily retired, I need to make sure that, you know, we have made decisions in the best interest of the future of this organization and the women and kids that we need to serve. Because I think, you know, again, I think we've always maintained excellence of service, and that's really, really important to me and our board and our staff.
Speaking of collaborations and seeking input, Town Council recently passed an emergency shelter bylaw, and Cornerstone is an emergency shelter. What was the reaction of yourself and your board to this new legislation?
Yeah, the emergency care establishment. Yeah, we are still working through that process, Rob. And it's been developing over a period of time, as you know. We were surprised that this happened, as I know Transition House has also spoken to you and spoken to other people. We weren't consulted. It was a surprise. And the board and myself and the organization continue to work through the process. And yeah, so we're still working through it.
I'd like to go back to this idea of people transitioning out of your shelter and into the community. Do you happen to have a story that you could share with us? Don't have to give us any names or identifiers, but a story of a transition that somebody went through to come back into the community that you feel was a success.
Oh, we have many, and certainly we have client satisfaction surveys that people fill out at the beginning of their stay and then at the end of their stay. And certainly those stories and those comments always, you know, they usually give me shivers and make me really, really proud of the incredible staff we have here, Rob. I think we've had great success with our second stage housing. I think, again, that model is pretty perfect in terms of, you know, families. I think of one family in particular that was in our shelter for a long period of time because they were a larger family, couldn't get into housing. There were complications with family court and her finances and all of that. So being able to go out and find housing at the deeply affordable rate we offer was really, really challenging for her. So, you know, again, with this opportunity, she was one of the first clients in our second stage program. It was really great, right? I remember our staff going over to visit them once they got settled, and the kids were so happy because they all had their own bedroom. And they hadn't had their own bedroom for months, because people don't realize when they're in the shelter, they're in one room together. So if you've got, you know, 3-4 kids and you're all in one room together, you know, certainly the shelter is quite big and lovely with, you know, with separate living space, but, you know, for those of us who have parented, can you imagine sleeping night after night in a room with all of your kids? So that was really heartening to hear that the kids were just so excited, couldn't wait to show their rooms to the staff, They had decorated their rooms with great delight. So yeah, those things really matter, and they're things that we just take for granted for in our own worlds, right? And I always, always, always want to think about, like, I could be in those shoes. Any of us could be in those shoes. So what would I want if I had to bring my kids into a place like Cornerstone? What do I want that to look like? What do I want that to feel like? And that's always what we think about and hold at our hearts in terms of what we want to do. So with our second stage, Rob, I just wanted to point out that this is a the board agreed to use some of our board funds to support this program because we've received no government funding to run this second stage program. So what we do is, women give us a some rent, and certainly if they're on assistance, it's just their shelter allowance. And then we top up what we're leasing it for with Habitat. Because the board knows, and they were great in sort of jumping at this opportunity that I'd suggested this is a good idea. And our board was like, yeah, it is a good idea. And they understand how challenging the issue of housing is and our need to get creative about it. Because it's expensive to build housing. So how can we get creative, fill a need, and be able to financially sustain it? So this has been a real, it had all of those elements, and also a great community collaboration, which we really value, of that's what we need to do more and more, is to collaborate with other partners. And we know that. And sometimes the opportunities come up, such as this, that it was just a golden opportunity. And it was, Megan and I, at the time when Megan was the executive director, and we worked very closely together, and we're always looking for opportunities, right? Is there a build we can do together that makes sense for both of our organizations? So this just made sense for both of our organizations. It's a win-win, and it's a win for our community, and one that we're happy to talk about because right now we don't hear a lot of fun, good stories. Times are tough.
How do we inspire more public debate?
Yeah, as you know, Rob, we participated in the Ryan inquest, and you and I had a conversation about that. And we are continuing to follow up with some of the recommendations that came out of the Ryan inquest. So on Monday, we will be meeting with our local paramedics to talk about training paramedics. We have maintained ongoing training with police services, which was also a recommendation that came out of this inquest, as well as many other domestic violence inquests. So we've been providing training, platoon training, to all the officers with Cobourg Police Services, as well as Port Hope Police Services. And that was through a victim services grant that Cobourg Police got. So education is a real key pillar that we want to be spreading the word, and one that we're really going to dig in our last, we're in our third year of our strategic plan. And public education is one that we're really going to dig into because we feel like we can do it. And it's important. It's important work to, to spread the word of what is gender-based violence, what is happening, what are the barriers, what does sexual violence look like. We've really reignited our prevention program in schools this year. We have a dynamite educator who's in schools across Northumberland County. She is a whirlwind of energy and is doing a dynamite job this year. So this fiscal year will end with her seeing and providing prevention education to over 1,200 students across Northumberland County. So that's a huge number of students that we're talking about these issues with. So we talk about issues like consent with both female and male students. We talk about healthy relationships. We talk about mental health and boundaries. We're laying those seeds so that hopefully, prevention is that thing that we talk about. But what does it mean? It means preventing violence from happening. And the only way that we can do that is to start with our kids and youth. and hopefully raise boys and men who will be respectful, who understand what does consent mean. Consent doesn't mean just one time. And for young women to really be thinking about what does a really positive relationship mean. And we received this one really heartwarming letter from a young woman. She was only in grade 8, and her letter, I was, oh my goodness, it was so eloquent. And she talked about the impact of having that prevention program to her and her her and her peers. And she talked about, for the first time, I really thought, what does a healthy relationship look like? Because it's not an average conversation. I don't think it's a conversation that many people are having with their kids around the dinner table. So, you know, yes, they're learning about math and sciences and all of that in schools, and that's really important, but we maintain it's equally important that we're also talking and educating about this. So that's work that we'll continue to do, that we're deeply committed to, Robin. You know, conversations aren't with just the adults and the politicians. The conversations are equally important with our children and our youth and our educators and our paramedics and our police services and our first responders and the healthcare sector. So that's where we're digging in. And yeah, I look forward to the work ahead. I think it's really important work, and one that I know I'm committed to doing, and our team is committed to doing, and the board is. So I think the conversations, Rob, I think they need to happen at every level. And certainly part of it is our political action. And a big part of it has to be with our kids and what we're talking to them about, and giving them those tools to critically examine that first relationship they're in, right? And that was really what this young woman spoke to, is she'd never really thought about it before, but now she knows. And she's like, now I'd know some of the warning signs because I'd never think about it that way.
You alluded to it earlier, and I'd just like to come back to it to close, and that is your sense of hope. How do you keep your sense of hope? What do you do to maintain that?
I think reading letters like that, I think reading the comments that clients share with me, the stories that the staff share with me, I think I see hope in a room full of great community people like we had yesterday at our Women's Day luncheon. That, you know, that really filled my cup, as Maryam Motsef said. My cup was really full at the end of yesterday, because it was a room, more than 200, 250 people in that room. All local community people who were there because they care about this issue and they want to see change. And they show support for all women who have experienced gender-based violence and wanting to make a difference. And yeah, that gave me a great deal of hope. And yeah, it was a great day. And really the hope is the resilience that I see in women that I have for 35 years.
Nancy Johnson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Rob.
That was Nancy Johnson, the Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.